You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the earth. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, July 15th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for today's program, which is a blockbuster of a program. This will have you shouting for joy and cursing in anger, let me tell you. We'll start off with the cannabis headline news. We got some updates on that Massachusetts proposal to raise their marijuana tax to 28%. And then in our Police for Reform segment, we're visited by U.S. Marshals Service retired Chief Deputy Matthew Fogg, who is going to talk about bigoted cops. Yes, bigoted cops and how we prevent and fight back against them. This is a great discussion. I was very excited to speak to him about it. In drug war data mining, we'll take a look at one of the consequences of our opiate epidemic and our federal government's maintaining Schedule 1 for cannabis that can help fight that opiate epidemic. That is the rise in HIV infections in some of the most vulnerable counties in America. We'll talk about that. Also, in What About the Children Today, we speak with Erica Marie Tucker, a felon in the state of Texas for breastfeeding her child. We'll tell you how that came about. And at the end of the show, we'll have time for a radical rant where an Oregon tax theft shows the desperate need for banking services in the marijuana industry. It's all coming up right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Please support our sponsors. They help keep this show on the air, and you can too.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
And now, another episode of Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinthgarnell III. Tonight, we revisit a classic of the cannabis cinema, 1977's Animal House. While not known as a cannabis movie per se, this scene, reenacted by the Royal Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre Company, features a cannabis-smoking professor, played by Donald Sutherland, sharing a joint with his student, Pinto, played by Thomas Hulce, while exploring the nature of the universe. Enjoy!
Verily, it appears as if the entirety of the heavens could be as one minuscule atom in the fingernail of a heretofore unknown colossus. Marvel upon marvel. So, logically, one minuscule atom in mine own fingernail could
contain a microscopic entirety of the heavens.
Oh, wouldst thou entertain my purchase of cannabis?
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre, I'm Leonard Pinthgarnell III.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the gay agenda, only with better music.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is your cannabis headline news. Brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net. The complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at marijuanamoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Thursday, June 15th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. The Boston Herald reports that Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker is not committing to a House proposal to hike the tax rate on recreational marijuana to 28%. Saying it is unclear to him if it is too high or low to cover the costs of regulating the state's legalized pot industry. Quote, I don't know if this number would meet that test or not, Baker told reporters after an unrelated event in Beverly yesterday. Baker's comments came as House leaders abruptly canceled today's anticipated vote on the bill amid what Speaker of the House Robert A. Delio cited as procedural issues and unspecified concerns over the bill's languages. The bill faced blistering criticism from advocates and State Senator Pat Jalen, co-chair of the committee that produced it, particularly over the proposed tax rate, though DeLeo said he still believes the overall bill is, quote, terrific. California would set standards for organic marijuana, allow pot samples at county fairs, and permit home deliveries under legislation to be considered by lawmakers Thursday as the state prepares for next year's start of legal marijuana sales, says a report from the Associated Press. Lawmakers and Governor Jerry Brown's administration are working to merge California's new voter-approved recreational pot law with the state's longstanding medical marijuana program. They have settled on an array of regulations to protect consumers and public safety while ensuring taxes are collected. The provisions were tucked into the state budget agreement between Brown and top legislative Democrats, announced this week following months of negotiations with businesses operating illegally or in the legal medical marijuana field, and investors who want to enter the nation's largest legal marijuana market. The Des Moines Register reports that Iowa State University lost another appeal in federal court against the decision of an administrator to prevent a marijuana advocacy group from printing a T-shirt that included the university logo and a marijuana leaf. The 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on Tuesday, for the second time, said ISU administrators, including former President Stephen Leith, violated First Amendment rights of two students who were top officers of the ISU chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. The ruling also fines the four administrators, including former Senior Vice President Warren Madden, former Senior Vice President for Student Affairs Tom Hill, and Leisha Zimmerman, Director of ISU's Trademark Office, can be held personally responsible for violating the students' constitutional rights, setting up a potential for the students to seek monetary damages. Iowa taxpayers would be responsible for paying, since state law indemnifies state employees sued in federal court for action pertaining to their jobs. New Mexico's top health official on Wednesday rejected state medical cannabis advisory board recommendations to add opiate dependence and Alzheimer's disease to the list of conditions that qualify someone to legally buy medical cannabis from a state licensed producer, according to the Albuquerque Journal. The board had voted 5-1 on November 4th to recommend adding opiate use disorder to the list of 21 medical conditions that allow a patient to qualify for the New Mexico Medical Cannabis Program. Health Secretary Lynn Gallagher rejected the board's November 4th recommendation, citing a lack of scientific research to support the argument that cannabis can offer relief from the pain and suffering of people struggling with opiate addiction. Quote, while I share the advisory board's concern about opiate use and its costs, I cannot say with confidence that the use of cannabis for treatment of opioid dependence and its symptoms would be either safe or effective, end quote, Gallagher wrote in her response issued Wednesday. The Herald and News reports that authorities have arrested an Oregon Department of Revenue employee after he allegedly stole tax payments made by a medical marijuana dispensary in Klamath Falls. Theodore Raymond Paulson, age 55, of Salem, was arrested Tuesday after authorities acted on information from Ed Medina, owner of A Better Way Medicinal Alternatives. Medina said multiple money orders mailed to cover payroll taxes for his business had been stolen, and police determined Paulson was the likely suspect. The Department of Revenue spokesperson could not comment Wednesday on Paulson's role in the department or other details due to the ongoing nature of the investigation. Paulson was booked into the Marion County Jail on charges of first-degree theft, mail theft, first-degree official misconduct, and possession of methamphetamine. He was released on his own recognizance with orders to appear in court on July 12th. This has been your Cannabis Headline News. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
And now, another episode of Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinthgarnell III. Tonight we revel in the hilarity of acquiring cannabis when miscommunication occurs between the cannabis delivery service and the consumer. The Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company presents the classic David's Not Present piece, made famous by Richard Merrin and Thomas Chong. Enjoy.
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David. Pray grant me immediate passage, good sir. I come bearing a package of great import.
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David, as I previously informed you. Make haste in unlatching this portal, for I believe the constable hath cast his visage upon me. I bring you the package you seek.
'Tis David?
Affirmative, my good man. 'Tis David. Now open this door forthwith.
David's not present.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre, I'm Leonard Pinthgarnell III.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
This is Police for Reform. Brought to you by Law Enforcement Action Partnership at LEAP.cc. LEAP is a group of law enforcement professionals advocating for criminal justice reforms in the areas of drug prohibition, mass incarceration, asset forfeiture, community policing, and more. LEAP provides qualified speakers across the world to speak with authority on criminal justice issues. We visit with one such speaker now in Police for Reform.
Welcome to Police for Reform. I'm Russ Belville. Joining us today on the program, we have retired Chief Deputy Matthew Fogg from the U.S. Marshal Service. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's good to be with you.
I've got your bio, and it says that you joined the Marshal Service in 78. You quickly rose through the federal law enforcement ranks, supervisory special agent with the DEA, international work that you've done, and apprehension of hundreds of fugitives charged with some of the most dangerous and terrible crimes that we could imagine. Did that put your work squarely in the middle of the Just Say No 1980s? And what do you think of Jeff Sessions, our attorney general, hearkening for those good old days of tough on crime law enforcement?
Well, you know, you got two questions. I mean, certainly when you're talking about in the 80s and when I came on board, you know, that's when the drug war started ratcheting up. So, and then, of course, myself having a chance to see how law enforcement operates, I got a chance to see it on the inside, that blue wall of silence, all of the things that we do in law enforcement. I saw a lot of bias in law enforcement. I saw a lot of discretion that we had, that we can really do a lot of damage to the public, matter of fact, and we can do good things, but we can do a lot of damage to the public. So I saw it both ways, especially that war on drugs and all of that. So, for me, when you start talking about being hard on crime, that they use that sort of terminology that maybe even Jeff Sessions comes with, what does that really mean? Does that mean being hard on a particular race of people, on those folks who we can easily control, or does that mean equal opportunity enforcement operation? And I just didn't see it that way. If I seen it as an equal opportunity enforcement operation, where we go after everybody just as hard, it didn't matter who you were, then I would have said it would have fixed itself. But because we kind of just dealt with a certain aspect of society, being hard on that aspect of society, then I saw the biasness where it said to me, something needs to change.
Yes, like what we saw in the 1980s, tough on crack users, not so tough on the Wall Street cocaine users.
Hello, that's what I'm talking about. And you see them, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say that leads into another aspect of your resume. I'm checking out here how you are the chapter president for the Heritage Chapter of Blacks in Government. And of course, with Black Lives Matter and so many of the high profile incidents of law enforcement shooting and killing unarmed black citizens, this is of major import when we talk about reforming our police departments. Do you feel that the war on drugs has led to this? That would this have been a part of our law enforcement without the war on drugs, or did the war on drugs make it worse in any way?
I think the war on drugs is sort of an offtake of the culture of the country when it comes down to why law enforcement. It really wasn't about community policing. It was more about, controlling and command and control, controlling a certain aspect of society. And especially once we started building, we started seeing institutions build prisons, more judges, more lawyers, more attorneys, more people, police getting involved. And, you know, even when President Clinton said, hey, we're going to put 100,000 new police officers on the street. If they had came on the street, and again, I use this term, if they had come onto the streets and say, we're going to have an equal opportunity to enforce my rights, even with the war on drugs, had they went out and started doing it equally, and we could have been able to go into the more affluent white neighborhoods and go out to import drugs as well as the low-hanging fruit, as they call it, the major urban areas, then I think the situation, they probably would have ended the whole war on drugs and did it like alcohol prohibition. They would have ended it and said, let's go with treatment, let's go with education instead of just sort of lock them up and throw away the key. But when we see these racial disparities today, and we see on every Justice Department survey or pattern and practice investigation, we see over and over again these widespread disparities. They're not even close when it comes down to race issues in law enforcement. So again, I see law enforcement, the community I come from, and where they see law enforcement, what I have had a chance to observe was it was more about racial bias policing. And how do we stop it? We have to start to say, how do we get law enforcement to understand you're there to serve and protect the people, not the people serve and protect you? So this is kind of sort of like the mindset that I began to observe in my operations, and so many things that I did in law enforcement.
It must be frustrating to see the noise coming from Capitol Hill these days with the Department of Justice. And, you know, Jeff Sessions, the attorney general, has already pulled back on investigating the police officers or the police departments under these pattern and practice sort of investigations, trying to tie the hands of DOJ, as it were, and trying to consign this to an idea that it's just a few bad apples, forgetting the last part of that saying, which is spoil the bunch. This must be frustrating. What do we do as citizens and advocates with police for reform? How are we going to fight back against this tide?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you said that. I wrote an article, it's just a few bad apples. And the problem with that is which apple is pulling you over? I mean, for the people. So if you don't know who that bad apple is, then they're all tainted. And one of the things when I saw how the New York Police Department, many of them turned their back on their commander-in-chief, that told me right off that, you know, that blue wall of silence, that world is real. The law enforcement is powerful, is a powerful and very strong tool. It's sort of like when you get power, after a while, power begets power, and sooner or later, you forget who you were there to serve and protect. So what I see in law enforcement today and how I see this whole blue wall of silence, how I see how we operate, there's this problem of the bad apples are there, but it's people are, instead of focusing on throwing, saying, hey, well, you're throwing all law enforcement under the bus every time you talk about a few bad apples. Again, if you don't know who the bad cops are, then the bottom line is all of them become suspect. And what I like to see, which one of the things I'm working towards, is to try to start an organization of that protects whistleblowers, that cops who are willing to come forward, because I know a lot of cops that want to come forward and point out the bad apples. Of course, in law enforcement, police know who the bad apples are. It's like the National Rifle Association always says, the only way you deal with a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. The only way you deal with a bad cop is with a good cop. But we have to feel comfortable to come forward, because if we come forward, most of the time we are shot down, our careers are destroyed. You know, I went through that whole thing in my career, taking on the Justice Department, proving race discrimination exists, and now I'm the class agent representing thousands of black U.S. Marshals all over the United States. alleging the same thing that I originally led about how the racism was pervasive internally. Now, if it's happening internal and I'm working next with a bigot with a badge, I got to work next side by one of them. Imagine what that person is doing to the public. So it is a systemic problem that we have to be willing to say it is a problem in law enforcement. We can't worry about whether there's a few bad apples. We have to say you can't have no bad apples. End of the story, or people won't know who to trust.
That is powerful, and I'm so glad to hear you saying that, Matthew. And what we're seeing lately in the news, of course, this week we had the terrible shooting that took place on a congressional baseball field, and previously we had attacks on police officers in Dallas and Las Vegas, and I worry that these attacks just solidify a segment of our population that is, you know, behind the, you know, Blue Lives Matter, they often like to say, and the police officers themselves becoming even more silent and feeling there's more opposition against them. I admire the work you're doing trying to break through that blue wall of silence. And I'm wondering what our listeners can do as average citizens to help that focus.
Right. What happens in that whole scenario, we become so powerful. And the only way, like in the, for example, U.S. Marshals, we have a witness protection program. The only way the government was able to prosecute a lot of these bad cases is they had to have witnesses come forward, but they had witnesses have to be protected. I believe the biggest way the public can help out is one of the things that I'm putting together, and I think that what they need to do is whenever you hear cops that are willing to come forward and tell the truth and tell it like it is, they got to give those cops full support, and they got to ask more cops to come out and tell it like it is. A lot of cops are good cops, and they want to point out the bad cops. They want to point out the scenarios that maybe that situation of them pulling, say, racial profiling and all of the writing extra tickets and all of this stuff that happens in certain racial minority ethnic areas and other things that we do in law enforcement that we can get out of control real fast with. But if somebody was able to come forward and people able to speak out, they need the public support so that those commanders and folks won't turn around and make them look like the bad guy. So that to me is how the public, our organization here, the Law Enforcement Partnership Network, Action Partnership Network, they can go up on our website and they can join, they can help to support us. We've got a place up there where you can make donations. But again, like I said, any place where you talk about whistleblowing cops, I'm writing a book, Bigots with Badges. These are the realities of law enforcement. How do we get it under control to where it now serves and protects the people? It is community policing, and it's not about going in like we're fighting a war. The bad guy versus the good guy. It's almost that mindset with cops out there on the street. When I pull you over, I'm God, and whatever I say, you do, or either there's going to be consequences. We need to kind of get rid of that sort of mindset.
I couldn't agree more. This is fantastic. Matthew Fogg from Law Enforcement Action Partnership. Do you have any other shout outs, any sort of contact information you'd like to give out for any of your organizations?
Yes. Well, I'm a member of Blacks in Government. That's BigNet, BIGNET. And so Blacks in Government, BigNet.org, Federally Employed Women.org, FEW.org, and also, again, myself, I'm working on a whistleblower network for officers. I'm putting it together now. I just ask for their support. When they hear my name, they can Google Matthew Fogg. They can see I took on the U.S. Department of Justice, won a major civil rights Title VII case. So they can, I'm just all in that internet on things that I do to advocate for police, but also make certain that we're doing it right.
Thank you so much for the work you're doing, Matthew Fogg. We appreciate it, and good luck on all your endeavors.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll receive over 20 hours of original first-hour podcasts, plus other materials only available to paid subscribers. Or for just $9.99 a month, become a VIP patron. You'll get over 40 hours of podcasts for the complete program, including Toker Talk Radio, plus ad-free downloads of the segments heard on the Marijuana Agenda. Plus, VIPs get exclusive access to the video replay of the two-hour live stream show and downloads of the spreadsheets and charts I provide from my years of curating marijuana data sets. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the Alcohol Agenda. But a lot safer.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, from the Burning Issues podcast on CannabisRadio.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in Drug War Data Mining, we take a look at a piece up on the Washington Post in their Wonk blog. Keith Humphreys points out one of the terrible consequences of the opioid epidemic, which is making the fight against HIV more difficult. And this, of course, is something we've been fighting against since the 1980s, trying to bring down the rate of HIV infections in this country. And by and large, we've made great strides. There's been all sorts of advances in medicine and, of course, more public health campaigns and understanding of the disease to prevent its spread. But the problem we've got here is opioids, which, of course, are deadly enough as they are by themselves, also increase the risk of HIV outbreaks because sometimes people are injecting those opioids and using shared infected syringes. This led to an outbreak in Scott County, Indiana, where then-Governor Mike Pence declared a public health emergency in 2015. So coming up on next Wednesday, next Wednesday, I thought that it already happened. Next Wednesday, the health experts are holding a summit on Capitol Hill to work on this problem of the HIV infection rate. And this new website that details all of this data showing the relationship between the opioid epidemic and HIV infections, also hepatitis C infections that are having problems. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has pointed out 220 opioid addiction-racked U.S. counties that are the most likely or the most vulnerable to this outbreak. And we've got the map here on our live stream. You can see most of the counties where this is going to be a big problem are clustered in the rural Appalachian region of the eastern United States, these poor counties where they've been just ravaged by the opiate epidemic are most vulnerable. And we hate to see that be compounded by an increase in HIV and hepatitis C, as well as these opiate overdoses that are so devastating to these communities. And the fight against this continues. The other problems, of course, these counties are poor and suffering from great amounts of unemployment. So they don't have health care. And we've got an administration now that's looking to even ratchet back what little access to health care poor people have. And we can only expect these HIV and hepatitis C rates to increase. This Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, the Senate Republicans are currently working on a repeal and replace package that would decimate these communities that are already hard hit by the opiate epidemic and will be hard hit by HIV and hepatitis C. And the senators are doing it in secret. They're not even allowing reporters to bring cameras with them to talk to them in the halls of the Senate about the bill. They're not releasing any copies or any information about these bills because they know it's political suicide. They know that they are consigning millions and millions of people, especially people in these rural, poor counties that overwhelmingly supported Donald Trump. They are consigning them to death and misery and illness and injury and addiction by removing what little health care they have. And we can only hope that people will begin to make the connection between how they vote and how our people are taken care of, that maybe people will start to vote in their own best interest and recognize that taking care of the public health is an investment in the people. When we allow HIV or hepatitis C to run rampant in some of these places, that decimates the workforce, that decimates productivity. It's in all of our best interest. For the same reasons that we don't have private fire departments, for the same reasons that we have fire departments that will put out the fire at anybody's home or business, whether or not they've paid taxes, whether or not they're hardworking members of society, we put out their fires because we know that fire can spread to other people. The same thing goes for health. We've got to take care of the least among us, the poor, the addicted, the people with severe and devastating communicable diseases, to protect all of us and make this a better society for all of us. Just one more way the war on drugs is hurting the people.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Putting together the most comprehensive live weekday marijuana news talk program is a full-time job. Now you can do your part to ensure that listener-supported independent cannabis radio journalism can continue by becoming a patron of the Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. If you're an organization or business looking to promote your brand, we have sponsorship patronage available at mjagenda.com. Sponsorship includes 15 and 30 second ad breaks and 6-minute interviews on the podcast, depending on sponsorship level, which begins at $19.99 a month. Thank you for your support, and remember, I cannot do it without you. Please become a patron today at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, Kevin Sabet's boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaman Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cannabis Sports Medicine from the Gridiron Cannabis Coalition. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
For decades, what about the children? was a rallying cry for concerned parents fighting to keep marijuana away from their kids. Now, advances in medical cannabis technology have parents fighting to access marijuana to save their kids. In some cases, those parents who utilize medical cannabis have to then fight the state for their kids. Today, we're joined by another guest from Moms for Marijuana International as we ask, what about the children?
Welcome to What About the Children? I'm Russ Belville. Today on the program, we want to discuss the case of a young woman in Texas, a mother who is facing some severe interference from the state of Texas over her maternal cannabis use. We're speaking with Erica Marie Tucker. Erica, how are you doing?
I am decent.
Decent.
It's been a fun journey.
Yeah, it's not been a fun journey at all. I first heard about your story earlier last month in Fort Worth, Texas, as you spoke so passionately at the Fort Worth Cannabis March there. Tell our listeners what your story is. What's happening with you in the state of Texas?
It's actually over. It was over as of yesterday. It was kind of, or 2 days ago. I started having seizures about 3.5 years ago. We had no idea what was going on. They came out of the blue, which was kind of crazy. Had no insurance at the time, so I was just looking into essential oils, natural type of remedies, and kept researching cannabis was helping for seizures. Obviously, I'm in Texas. I'm not in Colorado or California or anything like that, so I took it upon myself to try to self-medicate and do whatever I could to help myself so I could be able to care for my children. And using here and there, that way I could try to do, you know, again, what was necessary to help any way, shape, or form with my seizures. And I had a really bad, one of the worst, grand mal seizures, which is what I normally have, was transported to the ER via ambulance. And, you know, they went through the checklist of, what medicine are you taking? I'm like, I don't take any. I can't afford it. I don't have insurance at the time. And, how are you, are you nursing? Are you pregnant? I told them, no, I'm not pregnant. Yes, I'm nursing. Didn't think anything of it. Plus, I was still coming out of it. And within an hour and a half of being released from the hospital, CPS was knocking on my door because one of their nurses had called CPS on me for nursing while partaking in cannabis.
And how was the nurse aware of your cannabis use? You had mentioned it to her?
I had mentioned it. Mind you, I was completely out of it still. I don't even remember half of my hospital visit while I was there. So I guess somehow I was doing that. And my husband says, no, they made you pee in a cup and take a drug test at the hospital, which has been transported to the hospital about 3 times prior, and I've never had to do that. So it was kind of just odd that, this one particular hospital, which is known, we found out, for multiple CPS reports, that's what they do.
Wow. So this is a situation you'd been through before. It had never come up before to have to take a urine screening. But this particular hospital is one that is wanting to do that and is leading to all these CPS reports.
Yes.
That's just awful because, the unintended consequence of that is women like yourself who will hear this story and go, oh, well, I guess I'd better not go to the hospital then.
Yes, exactly. They're actually known for that, and a lot of people don't want to go because of that situation.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So they find out CPS is knocking at your door. Tell us what happens from there.
I was on the couch, still kind of out of it. They had actually put me on double dose of my medicine, which I'm now prescribed to. So I was still like kind of in and out of it, tired and everything. They came. They pretty much removed my kids that night. My mom came over, and she's like, I'll take them. Don't worry about it. We'll see what's going on. So they made the kids leave immediately. They went with my parents to their house.
How many children, and how old are they?
I have 5, but my oldest was with her dad. She's 12, or she was 11 at the time, and then we had a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, 4-year-old, and my 22-month-old,
okay.
Under 2. So they all went to live with my mom, the younger 4. The older one stayed with her dad. And they went there, CPS, it was a long 5 months. We had to do, I think, 3 urine tests, 2 hair sample tests to make sure that, marijuana was no longer being used and that our drug levels were going down, which obviously they would when it comes to my children. I was able to get able to get a medicine to help with my seizure, so that was a major plus. But it was just a horrific ordeal that we had to go through, practically labeled like a bad parent because of something you're trying to do to help yourself. Mind you, I still worked. My husband was still working an amazing job. We're amazing people, homeschooling, church regularly, a Bible school teacher for 7 years. you know, you didn't think anything like this would happen to you, as much of a helicopter parent we are, you know? Ugh.
So let me get the timeline or the order of events in. So CPS takes your kids and says, to get your kids back, you've got to stop using cannabis. And in order to pass a hair test, you're going to have to stop for months and months and months. So how long had you stopped using cannabis before you found this new medicine that you're using to control your seizures?
It was when we left the hospital, they actually, there was one, you know, the mean nurse, I hate to say mean nurse, but the one very ugly and rude nurse that was practically yelling at me in the ER room. She's the one that reported us.
We'll call her Nurse Ratchet.
Yes, Nurse Ratchet. She was the one that was very just mean and nasty. Mind you, I am just been transported to hospital via ambulance. Please don't do this to me right now. And then I had another, and she was kind of young, so I was kind of surprised that the roles were flipped, because the older nurse, maybe 50s, 60s, was just so unbelievably sweet and kind. She went out of her way when she found out we couldn't afford the medicine to go to GoodRx.com, and I had no idea that they had coupons at all for prescription. She took it upon herself to go to GoodRx.com, print me out an actual coupon for my medicine, and I was able to get it a lot cheaper than when we were quoted $325 for 1 month. So, okay, you know, that's how I started getting on it, and that was pretty much following when we left the hospital.
Okay, so there wasn't this gap of time then where you were in danger of a major seizure, because you were able to get this new medicine immediately after you left the hospital. Okay. Now, does CPS know that when they make the order for you to stop using cannabis?
Yes, that was immediately when they left that day from our house, like after we got home from the hospital, they were immediately just said, no more using. You cannot use anymore. And that's what happened.
But I guess what I'm getting at is, was CPS aware at that point that you had gotten a new medicine to control your seizures? In other words, was CPS ordering you to stop using cannabis knowing it was what was controlling your seizures?
Yes. They ordered me to stop considering that.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and that's another aspect of this story that is frightening to me, to tell a young mother who's caring for five kids, you've got to stop this one medicine. What if you hadn't run into that wonderful older nurse who went to the website and got you the coupon, and you'd had to left the hospital without any sort of medicine to control your seizures? That could have happened, couldn't it?
That's what happened the past three times I've been transferred into the ER. That was like my third or fourth visit to the ER in the ambulance. And I never had gotten help until this last time. So all the other times I had gone without anything or out any kind of help or knowledge of anything like that up until, you know, March of 2016.
I see. Well, let's talk about the your care right now and mm-hmm. your health. With this new medicine you're using, is it comparable to cannabis? Does it have side effects that you wish you didn't have to deal with?
Yes. Side effects galore, which is not my favorite. I'm always tired. I've gained a lot of weight since it. I get really bad headaches. You get really dizzy a lot of times. Like if I take my medicine and I don't eat immediately, I'm sick, I'm nauseous, I'm everything possible like that. You know, I was told I was having seizures because I was nursing and I wasn't getting enough intake with my outtake of calories. But when I would, you know, in the morning, like, you know, partake in the tiny bowl, I was never a joint blunt type of smoker. It was just a tiny, tiny bowl or a couple hits. And, you know, I would do that to where I'd get an appetite and eat. Still take care of my kids, no headaches, no anything, you know, and still be able to function with life. But when I was told I couldn't do any of this anymore, I mean, I can't say I'm thankful that the kids were gone, but I stay positive throughout the whole thing. Like, I don't say I wish I wouldn't have done this. I wish I wouldn't have said this, because life, it is what it is. It happened. I can't go back and change it. But it did help me appreciate my kids way more than I ever would, you know, could. You know, you can always appreciate your kids more and more. But it just really helped me look on the aspect of, well, here, this is a new medicine. I was completely had no idea what was going on with this medicine. I didn't have my kids, but I was able to kind of get used to this medicine without having to care for five children. So there's always, to me, I just have to stay positive and look at every positive thing. I missed the heck out of my babies. I cried every day. I couldn't go in their room. It was a very, very tough time. But again, you have to think of everything positive to get through something that horrific.
So at the beginning of the interview, you said it's now over. So you've gotten your kids back. Is that the case?
Yes. We had to complete, Greg and I had to complete, my husband and I, a parenting class, a budgeting class, which was crazy. We had to complete a couples therapy class, which that's my best friend. That was even more crazier. I had to take, what is it called, a mental exam because the caseworker says, well, my sister has seizures and her epilepsy is caused because she's bipolar, which wasn't fair to me because you can't compare my situation to your personal situation.
Sure.
So I had to go through a mental exam to make sure I was stable enough to care for my kids, even though that was never an issue. The kids were practically taken advantage of when it came to, they would ask them, has your mom and dad ever touched you? They made them take physical exams and, like, go, you know, completely just take advantage of the girls when it came to an exam. They put us through a lot, but that was about a long 5 months before they officially came back home in August 2016, and our case was closed in September of 2016.
So how many total months was it?
Seven months before everything was closed.
7 months. Okay, so with the sole evidence against you being the presence of cannabis in your system on a drug test, the state of Texas took away your four kids, made you switch to a medicine with not devastating but unpleasant side effects, turn your life upside down, decide that you don't know how to budget, you're a bad couple, you might be mentally unfit. I mean, they didn't have any evidence the kids were beaten or mistreated or anything like that. This is just marijuana in your system, and you had to go through all that.
Yes, never once were cops involved. They never came and confiscated anything, took pictures of anything. This was just he say, she say.
Yeah, this is not even... This is not even evidence that there was possession of cannabis or any crimes committed. This is merely the chemical makeup of your body.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, yeah. And people wonder why we're fighting for marijuana legalization, Erica.
Exactly. And I actually finished up court, and I don't think I've actually told you this yet. This happened 2 days ago.
Okay.
I was just supposed to go to for an attorney status check because my husband lost his job a month and a half ago for having to miss so much work for court.
Sure.
Random. And my last one was actually, my trial date was next week on the 19th. It's supposed to be. Well, when I went to court on Tuesday for an attorney status check, he ended up appointing me an attorney that day and says, I don't want you to go to jail today, so let's try to figure this out. I practically had to plead guilty to felony child endangerment charges as of Tuesday. It was a very rough and tough day. I don't think I've ever cried as much as I have that day when I had to sit there and tell that judge that I was guilty of child endangerment charges with 5 counts.
Wow.
I'm now a convicted felon that has my children. You know, I'm convicted of child endangerment on all 5 of my kids that I have complete and physical custody of. It's astonishing what Johnson County and, you know, had me go through. When I had looked at the judge and said everything about, you know, pleading guilty and just like, I couldn't even talk. The judge looked at me and was like, it's okay, take your time. Every woman in there was so amazing, so sweet. You could see their hearts breaking, every worker in there for me. And I just, when I got done, I turned around and looked at Dale Hanna when I had tears streaming down my face, and I just looked at him and shook my head. And I just wanted to say, and I didn't, but I wanted to say so bad, are you happy? Is this what you wanted? As I walked away, because he knew about our story. He didn't like us and pulled our offers because we went public with our story. We were ordered by a judge, no gag order, but just saying, don't go on social media anymore.
And you did.
Of course. I thought my voice needed to be heard and it needed to be told, this story. And we received nothing but 100% positive feedback and support. And our story was shared all over the world. We have signatures on our petition all over the world. I was very astonished and just amazed at how much support we had.
Yeah, this is an amazing story, and I'm going to spread it far and wide. Your voice will be heard, Erica Marie Tucker, and this is just astonishing. So you're now convicted of these felonies. No jail time, I hope.
No, yes, I was convicted to, obviously, 5 counts of felony, felony charge of child endangerment. I have to serve 5 years probation. I have to do 130 hours of community service, pay a $250 fine with court fees, and it'll come into about $675. I have to take another drug class, which we completed with CPS, and another parenting class, which we completed with CPS, and there's something else I have to do, and I forgot. I have to do all that.
So 5 years of probation, of course, meaning
and it's
drug tests are involved.
It's going to be on my record for life.
Yeah, and this is a drug test involved the whole time, right?
Yes. Yes.
All right. So going without your cannabis medicine for your seizures for another 5 years, yes. of these side effects from the medication you're on.
Yes.
And my goodness. And of course, I imagine you lose your right to vote at this point.
Yes. I can't possess a weapon. I can't vote anymore, which I'm a strong voter. I've always voted. I can't do any of the things that I love to do anymore, you know, considering the crime was pretty much done and over with when it came to CPS. But Johnson County is known for being one of the strictest counties when it comes to charges like this.
Yeah, it is a tragedy, but I'm really amazed at how strong you are throughout all this. And I want to give our listeners a chance to help you out. I imagine you've got all sorts of expenses and all sorts of difficulties you'll be going through. So if you want, would you want to give them any contact information or ways to get in touch with you?
Yes, we actually, our family has an actual, I love blogging, so we have a website called thetuckerlife.com, and there's a tab when you go on there, it's our family website, and it says The Tucker Fight. All the links to our fundraiser page and everything, petition, and our donation page is on there. I have all the links provided.
All right. Erica Marie Tucker, thank you so much for joining us here on What About the Children? Your story, I hope, will lead to some positive change in this yes. arena, because nobody should have to go through what you've gone through. Thanks for staying strong and speaking out.
Thank you, Ron.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for Cannabis Facts About Alzheimer's from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cultivator's Corner with Jorge Cervantes from MarijuanaGrowing.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Don't smoke marijuana.
I want to revisit the story that I ended the news segment with today, coming out of Klamath Falls, Oregon, where a state tax employee, State Department of Revenue employee, is accused of stealing marijuana tax payments from a Klamath Falls medical marijuana dispensary. The fellow running the dispensary is named Ed Medina. And for disclosure, I think I know Ed Medina. I think I know the guy. I meet a lot of people, but, yeah, he's got his medical marijuana dispensary in Klamath Falls, and he's been using money orders to mail in his checks for his tax payments, using money orders to mail in the tax payments. And apparently these money orders have been stolen, allegedly, by this Department of Revenue employee. It just goes to show, once again, the difficulties our legal marijuana businesses face that other legal businesses don't have to face because of the federal prohibition of cannabis preventing us from using standard banking facilities. I'll bet the dispensaries would love to be able to pay their tax payments online, electronically, or by mailing in a check, something a little less liquid, a little less tamper-proof, but they're not allowed to do so. And this is going to continue to happen, and now it's reached all the way into the state employees. I mean, it's bad enough we got to worry about the armed robbers, and we got to worry about the gangs. We got to worry about people coming in and trying to steal from us who we'd expect to be stealing from us. But to have our own state employees getting in on the action, it shows once again how the drug war corrupts. It's time to finally pass some of these federal bills that would grant access to banking facilities. The drug warriors want to paint this as facilitating some sort of cartel action, money laundering, drug distribution. They want to make it into some terrible criminal activity that's going to cause all sorts of bad effects within our society. But they do so completely ignoring the bad effects that we have right now because of this lack of banking. We've told you the stories of dispensary employees having to cart around duffel bags full of cash to be able to take in to pay their taxes. And then the IRS penalizes them 10% for paying in cash. Bags of money that smell like weed, putting people at risk of armed robbery, a possible, you know, physical harm to themselves, just trying to follow the law. Where else are you going to find an industry that wants to follow the law like we do, that wants to be taxed, that wants to pay its taxes? We know part of the promise of marijuana legalization was how much tax revenue it would raise for our schools, for our drug rehabs, for our police departments. But if we can't make those tax payments in an efficient and safe manner, then that promise is denied. And then the people blame us. Well, gee, you guys said the tax revenues would pay for our schools. We'd love to pay taxes. We are paying those taxes, and we're currently doing so in very dangerous ways that no other business has to put up with. Now, there's been a reintroduction of the CARERS Act in the Senate. We'll talk a little bit about that in hour two. Passage of something like that would be a big step in providing some safety and security for the marijuana industry. It's not as if this industry is going away. There will be medical marijuana, there will be legal marijuana bought and sold in this country. The idea that the federal government is going to roll this back would just compound whatever problems they think they would be solving. Because the federal government can only roll back the commercial aspect of marijuana, that where it becomes interstate commerce. Even if it's intrastate, numerous rulings have said that the feds can affect intrastate commerce if that intrastate commerce could affect interstate commerce. It's some tortured logic to get there, but the feds have that power. They could shut down, enjoin, raid, sue, seize. They could do all of that throughout all of the states with commercial marijuana operations. Not all at once, not completely. It would be just a very small number compared to how many operators there are out there. But they could do that. They have the legal room to do that. Where they do not have any power is enforcing the states to criminalize the personal cultivation and possession of cannabis. So if the feds come in here and shut down the commercial industries, all they're doing is opening up the best opportunity black market weed dealers could have ever asked for. Every act that these federal officials do to thwart
the legal and standard business operations that marijuana should be enjoying, they just are continuing to make the situation worse. Maybe that's their goal. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. Live listeners, Hour 2 is next. VIP subscribers.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, check us out. Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you own it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.